was built not by just Safe policyholders, but in fact, by every company in the state at the time that they were a monopoly. That's where that fund started. That's what the earnings now are accumulated from.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Let's have Mr. DiLorenzo, Mr. Bowe, Mr. Telfer. John, you want to start?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a lawyer from Portland, and I'm here today on behalf of Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy. I am passing out a handout which looks like a fairly complicated schematic. I'm not going to comment on all of it. It was my analysis of the printed Bill 3980 in light of Representative Bates's dash two amendments. You can probably disregard everything below the large circle, which his amendment pretty much renders moot. But I would like to concentrate on what is above the large circle, which is embraced in his amendment, and maybe have a chance to comment briefly on some of the other points.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Pinot.
Mr. DiLorenzo, I don't know who Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy, Inc. is. Who would that be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knope, during the last time we were here on March 28th, we also testified, and Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy is a group that is made up primarily of members of the class committee from the All Sea Veneer and the ABC roofing cases. Those were two class action cases which basically obtained for policyholders funds that that had been appropriated from the Industrial Action Fund in 1982. And it is the purpose of Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy to first identify the surplus that exists and then take steps either through legislation or through litigation to refund that excess surplus to current and former SAFE policy holders, those persons for whom the surplus was accumulated and upon whose back the surplus was accumulated. That's the purpose of the group. When we were here last on March 28th, we supported portions of House Bill 3797 with respect to the independent oversight that it suggested. We opposed, however, taking money off of the earnings from the Industrial Action Fund and devoting them to an economic security fund. The bulk of our testimony related to our battle to obtain public documents from SAFE, which culminated in a decision from the Marion County Circuit Court, paving the way to our obtaining those documents. My client believes, and I share the belief, that there is currently excess surplus in the Industrial Action Fund anywhere between $200 million and $700 million. We also believe that the excess surplus is rightly the property of current and former policyholders of SAFE, and that it should be returned. Now, whether that is your view or not, and whether it differs from mine as to the ultimate disposition of the surplus, one thing, members of the committee, is for certain. Your decisions are only as good as the assumptions upon which they are based. They should not be made in the absence of reliable information. But since I last had an opportunity to appear, Judge Lipscomb's decision has been reduced to a judgment, and that's a copy of that is in your packet. SAFE has appealed that judgment to the Court of Appeals. In addition, SAFE has filed a motion seeking a stay of execution of the judgment, and a copy of my client's memorandum in response, just to update you at your leisure, is included in that packet. But among SAFE's contentions are that disclosure of the information will harm Oregon employers. And Mr. Chairman, the majority of the documents which we are seeking in that litigation has to do with SAFE's practice of issuing dividends to policyholders that have at times exceeded the premium paid in by those policyholders, and we are seeking documents that will help determine whether SAFE has amassed surpluses way beyond its statutory authority. SAFE asserts that the documents will, if they see the light of day, will harm Oregon employers, apparently because they think it will make workers' compensation insurance more expensive. However, these two things, disclosure of the documents and the insurance rates, have nothing to do with each other. If our concerns that the documents, if their concerns that the documents will enable us to successfully establish that SAFE is using predatory dividend practices come to light, then the only harm to SAFE would be that they would be prohibited from using those kinds of illegal practices. If the defendant, SAFE, is concerned that the plaintiffs or the Legislative Assembly might eventually obtain their records and then litigate or legislate over refunding the excess surpluses, there would again be no conceivable harm to Oregon employers.
Mr. DiLorenzo, the documents that you have been trying to subpoena from SAFE, if another party was trying to subpoena those exact same documents from a private insurance company, would they be subject to discovery or would they be privileged?
Mr. Chairman, very likely they would not be subject to the light of day. The problem here is that SAFE is asserting that it has trade secrets. The trade secrets exemption to the public records law was designed originally to keep private material that was submitted to state agencies by regulated parties. That's what the trade secrets exemption was for. No one at that time ever envisioned that the state of Oregon itself would be able to assert that it had trade secrets. The problem that you identify is that the state of Oregon is in business. And, you know, SAFE needs to decide, we think, whether it is fish or fowl. It is either a private business competing in the marketplace, or it's the state of Oregon. And if it's an agency, its records should be open.
Okay, I want you to proceed, but we want to try to consider the bill, particularly with the Dash 2s at this point. So go ahead.
Well, the final point, and this relates to the Dash 2, is that while the harms we believe that SAFE alleges do not exist, there is a significant harm if the public is going to be denied this information. Members of the Oregon Legislature have asked for certain of SAFE's documents, but even their requests have been rebuffed. And if you take a look at Exhibit 1 to my memorandum, you'll see a letter from Catherine Keene to Representative Kitty Piercy stating that SAFE is advised by the Department of Justice that a legislator may not use the public records law to request information from a public body. We therefore respectfully deny the request for additional information contained in your letter. The point, Mr. Chairman, is that it is time that you, at least as a legislative assembly, have access to reliable information that you can count on when you make your decisions. Now, above the circle on my chart are a number of boxes, and these boxes are preserved by Representative Bates's amendments. What this bill, as amended by the Dash 2s, will provide is that an examination and accountability commission be created. It hire an independent actuary, not an auditor who works for SAFE, not an auditor who will rely primarily on representations of management and then test them, but an actuary who can not only test management's assumptions, but can look to the validity of the assumptions. Representative Crummell basically asked a number of questions about how that process would work. It's very different from just an audit, because an auditor assumes many things. For instance, if SAFE assumes as an assumption that inflation will be 15% per year, well, of course, it will necessarily change outcomes. What this bill will do is actually evaluate the validity of the assumptions to give you the kind of managerial information that you need. Now, there's a lot of other things. The printed bill, Mr. Chairman, I've used up a lot of time, and I don't know whether it's at this point a good use of your time to go through it. The only point I would make is that of all the other things that the bill provides, Oregonians for Sound Economic Policy is in favor of all of it, with the exception of diverting any of the proceeds to the Workers' Benefit Fund. Not because the Workers' Benefit Fund doesn't do good things, it does, but because, in our view, that would divert money, which ultimately belongs to policyholders and former policyholders, from the fund. And I'll conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Mr. Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Steve Telfer. I represent the Alliance of American Insurers. I'll be very, very brief. We believe that the marketplace in workers' comp is impaired. I think I've told you that in prior hearings. And I think the report that was issued today at the Revenue Committee from the Secretary of State very much reflects that impairment. We support House Bill 3797 because we think it's good public policy. We think that the oversight that you get out of this EAC or the Accountability Commission is absolutely critical. Some people say that audits are the audits that currently take place are ample. They are not. You've got to have an actuary
independent outside, one that's skilled in property and casualty insurance, come in so you can effectively evaluate whether the assumptions and discounting rates and so on that safety users are appropriate. That's management information the legislature and the governor ought to have. It's long overdue. With respect to the Dash 2 amendments, which we just saw for the first time, frankly, we'd like to have the bill intact, but we can live with just that oversight. We think that's an important step.
Thank you, Mr. Butler.
Mr. Chairman, Brian Bowe, representing the National Association of Independent Insurers. It's a trade association of more than 560 property and casualty insurers. I simply echo Mr. Telfer's comment. As another insurance trade association, we think it's a vital piece of legislation, and I would only underscore Mr. Telfer's reference to the report that was released today to the Revenue Committee. We commend it to your further study and urge your passage of this measure.
Thank you. A question, Ms. DiLorenzo, or either of the other of you as well. Is there anything in this bill with the Dash 2 amendments that limits SAFE's ability to pay dividends?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Dash 2 amendments would strike all of the provisions that were in Section 4 and Section 6 regarding dividend limitations. And so my response is given the Dash 2s, there would be absolutely no change from the status quo.
Short of some kind of other legislative action.
That's my belief. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Steve Telfer, my reading of the Dash 2 amendments the interpretation would coincide with what Mr. DiLorenzo just said. I see absolutely no constraint whatsoever on safe dividends.
Other questions?
Yes, one brief one.
Representative Montan.
I know that we're setting up a method of analyzing and seeing how the books are kept and for them. Would we have the same privy to your, to Liberty Northwest books like this is going to have for SAFE? I want to do the comparison. I know we're wanting to level the playing field. I'd like to know, is this really leveling the playing field?
Mr. Chair, Representative Montes Anderson, Liberty Northwest and all other private insurers are private companies that have stockholders, and those stockholder reports generally are available, but I don't think in the same context that you would get out of the CAC. We're talking about a public corporation here, folks, a state-owned facility, the State Accident Insurance Fund. It should be subject to the public scrutiny.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We can have Mr. Van Natta, Mr. McKinney, Mr. Stilwell, Mr. Coe. And maybe drag up another chair.
I'd like to bring Dave Davidson up so he can
do it quickly, Fred.
An actuary, so he can answer some of the questions.
We've got 4.5 minutes
that have been asked. I am Fred Venata, appearing before you on behalf of Liberty Northwest. Being passed out to you is a piece on the workers' benefit fund, so you know what it does. Also being passed out to you are two legal opinions, one from the Attorney General and one from the Legislative Council, speaking to the fact that the legislature does in fact have authority over surplus money in the Industrial Accident Fund. Finally, and I will forego going through the charts that I had for you because of time constraints, but I would call particularly your attention to the third chart in that points out that SAFE has had administrative costs and losses of almost $2 for every dollar they've taken in premium in the year 1999 and the year 2000. I believe if I was responsible for managing a company that was operating with those kinds of losses, I would want to know about it.
But is that net premium after dividend?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry, not net after dividend. It's net premium collected. And the dividends are on top of these losses. The losses are the administrative costs and the money paid for into the Industrial Accident Fund for injured workers. That's $2 for every dollar in premium. On top of that, in the year 2000, they paid 80% dividends on top of that. The only reason I make that point is you need to know these facts and they don't come to your attention today under the existing process.
Yes, sir.
My name is Jim Stillwell from Harder Mechanical Contractors in Portland. We're one of the 100 largest privately held companies in Oregon. We've got about 700 construction workers that work for us, and I've been involved with workers' comp for about 18 years. What I've seen happening in the past 10 years, at this point, all the other competitors for my account are gone other than Liberty and Safe. They don't even call me because they have no chance of competing. And I have had, in my renewals, I generally have Liberty and Safe give me a quote. I've had an agent for Safe represent to me that if the dividends worked out the way they had the year before, I could end up getting more back in dividend than my premium would be, and also representing to me that they had another client the previous year who did, in fact, receive more money back than they paid, so they got free insurance. And I think that whole thing runs counter to the way the workers' compensation is supposed to be set up. They set a pure rate. People can't go below that rate. If Safe were to go out and say, well, I'll offer your insurance for free, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. So I think to maintain competition, something's going to have to be done about this.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Ed McKinney, president of GEM Equipment. And I'm going to add that the attached spreadsheet is a summary of Safe's operation for the last 3 years. Premium income for the last 2 years is just over half of claims plus administrative expenses. When dividends are included, policyholder costs drop to well under 20% of claims plus administrative expenses. I urge your support for House Bill 3980.
Thank you. Thank you. We have about 30 seconds, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dave Davidson. I'm an executive vice president and actuary with Liberty Northwest Insurance Corporation. We are the principal competition with Safe Corporation. What I am here to do is, first of all, just have you be aware that we have had some communications as to the conditions of the market. I think the report that the Secretary of State has received will validate everything that we have said and communicated to the Oregon legislature. Mr. Vannetta has handed out, I think, some excerpts from that report. It's a quite a voluminous report, but I have had some of the specific things extracted and recapped. I think time does not allow me to respond to some of the questions that were raised earlier today by the committee, but I have made notes, and I will be sure to respond in writing to each of you that had those questions, hopefully responding to your questions.
Thank you. And my apologies to those who did not get a chance to testify, but the 45 minutes are up. I'm now going to go to the opponents who have signed up in opposition to this bill. So if I could have Mr. Walter and Jessica Harris, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris, and I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors in strong opposition to House Bill 3980 as written, and House Bill 3980 with a dash two amendment. You will note that there is testimony being passed out to you on the original bill. In deference to to time, we will not cover that. However, I'd like to introduce Mr. Walton, who will discuss the Dash 2 Amendment and our views on that. Again, we are strongly opposed to the Dash 2 Amendment. We view this as excess oversight. That is not necessary. There are already three bodies that oversee SAFE, and we don't believe that the Dash 2 Amendment is necessary nor the bill.
Okay, Mr. Walton.
Good afternoon. My name is Harold Walton. I'm with Salem Road and Driveway and Riverbend Sand and Gravel Companies. We are members of AGC, and with AGC, I'm also on their Workers' Comp Negotiation Committee. And, of course, we are SAFE policyholders. On behalf of the over 1,200 member companies of the Associated General Contractors, I am here today to oppose HB 3980. We see this as an issue that already has considerable oversight with the SAFE's board of directors themselves, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and the Secretary of State Audit. I guess it becomes a point at which you say, when does auditing, the auditors, stop? Maybe a better approach to that would be, you know, I've heard the comment of using actuaries. Maybe the Secretary of State have an actuary on the audit team, but certainly not another layer of oversight. Then I'd like to, you know, if we look at a layer of oversight, we're also looking at the additional cost of that layer. Where do those monies come from? What do we get out of it? What's the real benefit that comes out of that additional information? So far, I haven't heard anything that really comes out of it that might be better explored from another avenue. I guess with that, I'd like to urge you to vote against House Bill 3980. Again, we see it as an unnecessary oversight of layering and the unnecessary costs associated with it.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Walton or Ms. Harris? Quickly, you don't see anything in the Dash 2 amendments that would limit SAFE's ability to pay dividends, do you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we view the oversight committee that is proposed as having the potential to recommend to you, the legislature, that those surpluses may or may not be necessary. It is our belief that that decision lies with SAFE, with its board of directors, and with the accountability that comes from the two other entities that already audit SAFE. We don't believe that this commission would be that in their charge to overview that policy, that they may necessarily come to a correct decision on that issue. And it is our view that this has the potential to lead to that kind of environment. And
that would require legislative action, would it not?
Right, Mr. Chair, yes, it would.
All right, and do you believe that the legislature has the authority to take any determined excess surplus and use it in the way the legislature thinks is most appropriate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is our belief that given the actions of what occurred in the early 80s, that we believe that any quote-unquote excess revenue that may exist would be subject to the same challenge that occurred then. And we don't necessarily believe that that would be good policy for the state. We believe that those dollars belong to the current policyholders of state, those that have paid them.
Would you object if the legislature, if there was a determination, if this bill passed and you had this accountability commission or whatever the name of it is set up, and they found that there was a significant excess surplus over and beyond what was actually necessary, and the legislature required SAFE to pay that money back to policyholders in lump sums, would you still be opposing this? Would you oppose that legislation?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, no, we would not.
You would not?
Not if it went to current policyholders, no.
Okay. All right, any other questions, Representative Bates?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why would you restrict that to current policyholders when clearly previous policyholders have put money into this fund, and that's part of why the fund grew, along with the fact that SAFE is tax-exempt from federal taxes?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, if you were to take out a life insurance policy tomorrow with State Farm and hold it for 10 years and then drop the policy and then pick up a policy with Allstate, and that it was determined that there were excess revenues in State Farm, and State Farm was to return those revenues. State Farm wouldn't return revenues to you. They would return revenues to their current policyholders. We believe it to be the same, similar instance here. The dollars that are in SAFE now belong to current policyholders.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Follow.
My point would be that if I had bought in that policy and had it for 10 years and it was fully funded and self-replicating, as many of those whole life insurance policies are, I would want my money back. Thank you.
Isn't it true, though, that SAFE is owned by the state and not by the policyholders?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I cannot speak fully to that issue. That would probably be a better question to by SAFE.
All right. Thank you. We can have Ms. Keene. I'm sorry, Mr. Representative Crumbles has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, because there is another bill out that would do this. How would you feel as policyholders, Ms. Harris, if we cut SAFE loose? Just made them independent. They're no longer a state agency, have nothing to do with the state. We sell them. They're gone. They're a company, freestanding. How would you feel about that?
Chairman, members of the committee, in an environment where workers' compensation is required as a matter of statute, SAFE serves an important role in this state. It protects, it is a necessary kind of balance between private market and total state control, a monopoly, as you see in the state of Washington. The two balance each other. The private market keeps it a competitive system, while the public nature of SAFE ensures that the costs are kept down so that everyone can afford workers' comp insurance. The two interacting in Oregon's market is good for Oregon businesses. And as long as SAFE and the private market are able to coexist, we believe it is critical to have that important balance so that Oregon employers can get the best deal on their workers' compensation insurance, and we can ensure that we have full coverage across the board statewide. We believe that it's critical to maintain that balance.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chairman? Thank you. You started off by saying that since workers' comp is mandated by state law, but so is auto insurance. I mean, auto insurance, if you're going to drive an automobile, it's mandated by state law that you carry liability insurance. If we're looking at someday, probably not in the very distant future, when employers are going to be mandated to carry health insurance on there, I will resist that, but I can see it coming. So that being the case, so then what you're saying is that should the state be in the auto insurance industry? Should the state be in the, well, we sort of already are in the health insurance industry. Should we then strengthen health insurance, our foothold in there, and try to take market share away from private enterprise?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm not going to sit here and try and determine whether the state ought to get into auto insurance. I can tell you that right now in this marketplace, SAFE and the balance with private insurers and the balance with people being able to self-insure is working in this state. Our workers' compensation laws and workers' compensation insurance is the best in the nation, and we should be proud that Oregon employers can afford and do cover their workers and that the system works well. I don't believe that it is in the public interest of this state to break a system that is working so well.
Thank you.
Do you believe, and this is for either of you, do you believe it's fair and reasonable that the private insurance carriers in this state, if what the proponents have claimed is true, namely that SAFE has expenses and payments, they're making payments, claims and expenses that are double their premiums, does that create a fair, even playing field for private insurers?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I don't know that what the proponents have claimed is true. I understand that there's a report out today. I have not had the opportunity to review that report in depth. Perhaps SAFE could better answer that question, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I guess to rephrase the question, if in the construction industry there was a public corporation that somehow had excess surpluses, let's assume for a minute that's true, and they were to use those surpluses to rebate back contract prices. Would you be objecting to that kind of arrangement as being unfair to private construction companies?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, perhaps, but I think we're speaking about something that is inherently different. Workers' compensation coverage, as I previously stated, is not something that you can choose to take or leave. It's something that is mandated by law, and in Oregon, under the current system, we have created an arrangement that works for Oregon employers. And I think that ultimately for us is the overriding concept. What works for Oregon employers? What makes this state competitive in a good business environment?
Don't you think that also part of a good business environment is to have a competitive marketplace that allows companies to compete fairly?
Representative Witt, members of the committee, Yes, I do. And again, I believe there's a report out that speaks to some of those issues, and I have not had the opportunity to review that.
Thank you. We can have Mr. Let's see, we're going to have Ms. Keene and Mr. Stiffel. Do you have a question, Representative?
Yeah, I just wanted to get a reaction, actually, from the AGC.
You want to get a reaction?
Yeah.
Not a problem.
No,
okay.
From AGC. Go ahead, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've been trying to read at least the, not the addendums, but the 100-page report from the Secretary of State.
On page 92?
Yeah. One of the claims that was given in prior consideration of a prior related bill, 3797, was that it was an advantage to SAFE that it was not taxed. But the conclusion in the report is, I'll just read the one sentence here. Indeed, it is true for many property and casualty insurers, workman's comp insurers that sustain underwriting losses in long-tailed lines of business, SAFE likely would be better off if it were subject to income taxes, assuming it could apply the same attendant income tax credits to taxable income earned elsewhere. So, I mean, there's what I'm trying to get at here, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to get her reaction, is then later, now that's sort of an argument in opposition to the bill that's before us, saying that some of the problems they said are not real. Then later in the report, it talks about the possibilities of changes in the economy, and I'm trying to read this as fast as I can, but the potential that we could, we have a basically a two-carrier system is basically what it's saying. We have two major carriers, SAFE and Liberty Northwest. In different economic conditions, we could end up with one, and that might not be in the best interest of the state. If you were in my position, would you want to have a chance to read this report before you voted? That's my question.
Mr. Chair, members of the
committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, absolutely. I believe that's really important, and I also believe that given that you have just now seen the Dash 2 amendment, that taking time to review this and getting all of the questions answered correctly is absolutely critical to you making an informed and good decision.
Thank you. We can have Ms. Keene and Mr. Stiffel.
I'm not going to get to it before the weekend.
I'll get one today and tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kathy Keene. I'm President and CEO of SAFE Corporation, and with me again is Brian Stiffel, our Senior Vice President. We have prepared testimony that's being distributed to you that addresses the full bill. We were not aware of the Dash 2 amendments until we arrived today. If I could quickly point out a couple of things in the prepared testimony and then move on to some of the issues that you've addressed with some of the earlier witnesses. About counting the cover sheet, 7 pages into our prepared testimony is a little sheet that talks about why we don't think it would be fair to use the money otherwise payable to our policyholders as dividends to subsidize the worker benefit fund. And in fact, it would produce some rather astounding and really unfair results, given that this fund benefits everybody in the workers' comp system right now and is paid for by everyone in the comp system, workers and employers.
Ms. King, if we can, I appreciate you're speaking to the bill. The Dash 2 amendments, I think, really are what the committee is looking at this point. So if
I'd be happy to address those.
If it relates to the Dash 2 amendments, I think it's probably productive. If it doesn't, it might not be productive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll move forward then. I think the issue that's in front of you.
By the way, I apologize. We just all got the Dash 2 amendments in the last hour or two,
yes,
but I realized you had prepared your testimony. I realized that might be a little bit difficult, so I appreciate the difficulty, but I think that would be most important.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to give you some context for what this whole thing is about, if I might, and I think Mr. Davey has some material that will be enlightening. This is really about a personal crusade by the CEO of Liberty Mutual Insurance Company of Boston against state funds all over the country. Mr. Davey has a memo that Mr. Ted Kelly prepared for other members of the industry looking to create a coalition to take on state funds because they're really getting in the way of the profitability of Liberty Mutual and some of the other carriers. And I thought you might find that of some significance historically. Why are all these issues in front of you this session? And along with that memo, I would like to also call your attention to the most recent triennial financial examination of our major competitor, which was highlighted, and it will show you that that our major competitor has been very profitable for the period under exam, which was a five-year period that ended December 1999. The company reports shareholder dividends of $130 million. That's profit that goes back to Liberty Mutual. And an additional $25 million was reported on the annual statement of our major competitor for the year ending year 2000. So I think you can see that there's an awful lot of money at stake here, but our major competitor has been doing very well, and it's a little bit ironic that the company that sent so much money to Boston would complain about the amount of money we've sent to Oregon employers.
These were dividends from Liberty Northwest Corporation to Liberty Insurance.
Correct. Their parent corporation. They are a wholly owned stock subsidiary of Liberty Mutual of Boston, and you'll note in the financial examination that the chairman of the board of Liberty Northwest is none other than Mr. Ted Kelly, the individual whose memo to the rest of the industry is suggesting we need to take on state funds all over the country because they're getting in the way of our profits. So that's just a historical kind of a backdrop for why I think all these issues have been in front of you this session. Now I'd like to move to the accountability issue. Mr. Chair, I noticed that Representative Devlin has his hand up. Would you like me to...
Representative Devlin.
That's a very minor thing, but could you resend this letter from Liberty Mutual to us? The copy that we have is going to take quite a bit of effort to read.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I apologize for the poor quality of the memo, but as you might understand, Mr. Kelly did not send an original copy to me.
Okay.
And I've obtained a copy of a copy, and I do apologize for the poor quality. If I may, Mr. Chair, at your suggestion, I'll move directly to the issue of oversight and accountability. And I must give Mr. DiLorenzo and other surrogates for our major competitor a lot of credit because they've been very clever this session in creating a fiction around the unavailability of information from Safe Corporation. The information that's subject to this new Oversight and Accountability Commission is information that's already available. It's routinely reviewed and discussed by our consulting actuary, by the consulting actuary who works for the Secretary of State on a contract, and there are consulting actuaries, not just auditors, and by the consulting actuary for the Department of Consumer and Business Services whenever we are under review by them. There are three consulting actuaries, and they all look at and discuss all of the actuarial assumptions that are made in establishing our reserves and our surplus and the adequacy of those reserves and surplus. So we really view this as a redundant exercise, but I'd like to continue my theme of how clever this fiction is. Mr. DiLorenzo was very forthcoming about litigation that he brought forward a year ago. I don't believe he was entirely forthcoming about what he really wants and who really wants the information. This information that's being sought came to us in a public records request from several different law firms. The requests were identical. They're clearly being coordinated by a single source. And the requests go to how we establish our prices and where are the profitable niches within our book of business. This is information that no competitor would ever voluntarily share with another competitor. Upon the advice of the Department of Justice, we responded accordingly and withheld or indicated we would withhold information that constitutes trade secrets. Other information covered by the request was released, including lobbying contracts, minutes of our boards of directors, other things that have been used to embarrass us, frankly, in the legislative process.
We've heard them right on the floor. Representative Devlin?
Just a clarification. In terms of obtaining information online, would they want down to the basic level of which of your basic, in a sense, workers' comp policyholders were profitable and which were not?
We believe that it would, Representative Devlin. It was a very comprehensive request for information. So upon advice of the Department of Justice, we've used what we believe are lawful means to withhold information that we don't believe a competitor would voluntarily release to another competitor. But this is not the information that's being requested of this Accountability Commission, except, Mr. Chair.
Do you believe that the information that Mr. DiLorenzo has requested that you are resisting giving would not be subject to subpoena if it was a private insurer that was being subpoenaed for the information?
Mr. Chair, I do not believe that any private insurer would voluntarily release the information that's being requested.
And you don't think they could be compelled to provide it?
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney.
Okay, thank you. Representative Knope?
Mr. Chairman, I think the question was asked earlier, who owns SAFE? I think you probably know the answer to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, we are part of the executive branch of the state of Oregon. We are created by statute. We operate under mutual insurance company principles, which suggests that the money not necessary for any other purpose is returned to policyholders. But we're very much owned by the state of Oregon and controlled by the state of Oregon.
So, if I could follow up.
Go ahead.
The taxpayers own SAFE.
Representative, what,
fair statement?
Mr. Chair, the taxpayers have made no financial contributions to SAFE's operations since 1920.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Follow up.
If you guys screw up and you don't have enough reserves, who's going to pick up the tab for the workers' comp claims?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, there's actually an Attorney General's opinion on that very question that says that the legislature has no obligation in the event of SAFE's insolvency, no legal obligation. And we are not part of the guarantee fund, although we're willing to be part of the guarantee fund. The private insurers have really never wanted us to be in the guarantee fund because we are subject to enough political manipulation that I think they're worried that if we go insolvent, they'll have to pay if we're in the guarantee fund. We believe that there would be a huge moral obligation on the part of the legislature if we became insolvent, and so we are duly conservative on your behalf.
Chair,
Representative Knope.
So there's a huge moral obligation for the legislature to act should the reserves not be sufficient. I don't think that's probably the argument today, but yet you're not willing to share the information with the legislature that the legislature, members of the legislature have requested, that made ultimately we have to act in our moral obligation to bail you out at some point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, that's really not the case. There have been a couple of requests, narrow, limited requests for information from legislators who I think unknowingly are asking questions at the behest of our major competitor and their surrogates. They are questions that are covered by the litigation around what information is disclosable and what is not. It's information that how we price our policies and where our profitable market niches are is really not relevant to whether we're solvent or not. The information of the type that you're describing is available, and if anyone cares to ask for it, we'd be delighted to provide it.
Ms. King, the chart that was provided to us by the proponents of this bill showed that in the year 2000, SAFE had a 190% losses plus expenses as a percentage of premium, whereas Liberty had 111%. How do you respond to that, and specifically, how do you respond that that does not in some way create an impediment for private competition in this marketplace?
Representative Witt, historically, all workers' comp insurers use investment income to offset underwriting losses. We do so to a greater extent than our private competitors for a couple of reasons. We believe our mission compels us to use our investment income to keep the cost of workers' compensation as low as possible, and we do that. So we underwrite risks that perhaps would not be acceptable to the other insurers as part of our public obligation.
Doesn't that suggest, though, or imply that this chart, doesn't it suggest or imply that from either a standpoint of efficiency or from the standpoint of price, that you are either inefficient compared to the market or you have a price that is too low based upon the cost?
Mr. Steffel's responsible for our financials, and I'd like to have him have
That's
an opportunity
fine.
To talk for a change.
For the record, I'm Brian Steffel, Senior Vice President of SAFE, and I haven't seen the chart, but my recollection of those numbers is I would assume that those are incurred values. Those are reserved values instead of paid values. In other words, how much each company is setting aside for loss payments in any particular calendar year. That includes all changes in reserves for prior years. We have 85 years of history. Our competitor has less than 20. So when we post changes, we increase reserves or decrease reserves for a prior year, they go into the current calendar year. If we were to compare paid losses, the amount of dollars we actually pay on claims compared to premium, compared to Liberty, we would have lower, consistently lower numbers. In fact, five charts up from the back, there is a chart comparing our paid loss ratios versus Liberty's loss ratios. And it shows that rather than the conclusion that they would leave you with, we are outperforming Liberty Northwest on that measure. Our loss ratios are consistently lower, and as time goes on, that gap grows and grows and grows.
And, Mr. Chair, I would add that our operating expenses are higher than our major competitors, and quite deliberately so. I think I mentioned this in testimony on the earlier bill. We spend money when it's leveraged to reduce losses for our policyholders, and the chart that Brian just referenced shows the results that we get for the money that we spend. Our claims adjusters have lower caseloads so they can manage the claim more effectively. We have more loss control and return to work and nurse consultants available to affect the ultimate cost of insurance paid by our policyholders.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair. Charles.
I have a couple questions. Thank you. I don't know if you heard my question earlier to the proponents of the bill, but I'd be interested in, and you alluded to this quickly as you were going through your introduction, where is their oversight of SAFE right now? I understand you have a board. I also understand that you report to the Oregon Investment Council. There might be a third body that you report to at this point, and I'd like to hear the members of those bodies, who they're comprised of, and the types of information that you're required to report to them at present.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, we are overseen first by a 5-person board of directors. 3 must be policyholders, 2 must be representatives of the public at large. They are appointed by the governor. They are subject to confirmation by the Senate. They serve 4-year terms. They must provide information quarterly and annually to the Department of Consumer and Business Services concerning the adequacy of the reserves in the Industrial Accident Fund. In order to meet that obligation, they retain a consulting actuary who is a fellow of the Casualty Actuary Society and is bound by the Code of Professional Conduct and Ethics of that society. Second, we are audited annually by the Secretary of State Audits Division. The results of that audit process are public. The Secretary of State retains an outside firm to do the audit because they don't have in-house expertise in insurance issues. The firms that they use, KPMG and now Deloitte Touche, have their own independent consulting actuaries that they use in that oversight. Our investments are managed by the Oregon Investment Council. Our board gives them advice on the objectives that we'd like to attain with our investments, but they manage the money and they direct the money to the different investment instruments that they choose.
Mr. Chair, can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Could you explain to me who exactly is on the Oregon Investment Council? I understand the treasurer is involved with that, and do they have any say over your reserves, the level of reserves that you keep for your investment?
They do not have any say over our reserves, but Brian attends those meetings. I'm sure he could tell you about the constitution of the Investment Council.
The board is set, and Oregon Investment Council is similar to our board. They're appointed by the governor. They have staggered terms. There's an ex officio member, the PERS director, the treasurer serves on the board, and a number of the other business leaders. They do not set reserves or targeted surplus levels, but they invest the money and they select the managers for SAFE's funds as well as PERS funds, Common School Fund, and other funds. They manage the monitor the manager's performance, and they decide where to allocate that money. Our board simply advises them what our business objectives are and how much risk that our board is willing to take in terms of asset allocation. The OIC's involvement is basically to implement that and to select the managers to monitor that with the advice of their counsel.
Okay. And one more question.
Follow-up.
I don't know if you have a copy of the engrossed, hand engrossed version that we've been dealing with, but there's a section, and it's also in the regular printed bill, I believe. It's on page 4 of the printed bill, and the new section number is 5. I can't tell what the old one is. It looks like 6. All right. Representative Devlin alluded to this section earlier and asked the proponents of the bill what this particular language would do to SAFE your ability to give out dividends and so forth. I'd like to hear from your perspective the impact that you feel that this language would have on your organization.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, it's not clear to us at this point. We haven't had an opportunity to reflect on this. There is language in the current statute that suggests that the legislature is entitled to any surplus not deemed actuarially necessary or otherwise needed by SAFE Corporation for ongoing capital or operational needs. That's been in the statute since money was taken from the fund in 1982. It's never been tested, and so we really don't know what it means.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else?
I'm trying to remember.
Representative Berard has a question. Representative?
It's kind of a three-parter.
Go ahead.
Mind, Mr. Chair. I got more information here on you folks than I ever really needed to know. But, so I'm going to try and simplify things for my own head. You have a budget.
Mr. Chair, yes, we do have a budget.
Who prepares that budget?
Staff prepares the budget, and it is recommended to the Board of Directors, and they approve or disapprove it or change it every year.
So your Board of Directors approve or disapprove your budget?
That's correct.
Does anyone, the state of Oregon, participate in approval of your budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, no.
Thank you.
That authority has been delegated to our Board of Directors.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to conclude a theme I started before some questions. I would point out a couple of really clever things that are in this bill that don't jump out at you as significant, but jump out at me as significant. Back to the theme of how clever Mr. DiLorenzo is. Section 4 of the Hand and Growth Bill.
We all know that he's clever.
Yes,
go ahead.
He knows. And sub D, the bottom of the page, last paragraph, and then Section 2 on the next page, talk about information that would become available through this new oversight mechanism. And it's very cleverly worded to make sure that there's no opportunity to claim a trade secrets exemption from the Public Records Act, because the Public Records Act would not apply to this oversight commission. So this is a very clever device, and maybe the ultimate objective of all this legislative activity. It's a very clever device to obtain information from Safe Corporation that has not been readily available, because we still believe it constitutes a trade secret, which can be protected under the provisions of the public records law. That concludes my comments, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to respond to any other questions.
Representative Frommel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you agree that, Ms. Keene, that the job of the Board of Directors of SAFE is to make sure that you operate in the black?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, absolutely.
Okay. So would you further agree then that really the job of the Board is not to provide, other than making sure that staff is doing everything that's legal within legislative authority and that sort of thing, that it's not really... that falls within the purview of the Board, but it's not necessarily to oversee and to provide, I'm trying to think of how I can put this, provide any kind of information that could potentially damage SAFE.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, when I said that it was the responsibility of the Board to make sure we operate in the black, that's only a small piece of their responsibility. They are publicly accountable for the adequacy of the Industrial Accident Fund. They are required by statute to submit an annual report to the legislature on our operations, and that report was submitted one day ahead of the deadline, and I sent a copy on their behalf to every member of the legislature. I've done so ever since I've been president of the company for the last 9 years, and I end my cover letter transmitting the information with an invitation to respond to any questions that the information may provoke, and I've never had a single question. But Representative Crummell, back to your question, our Board is publicly accountable for the entire operation of Safe Corporation and for the achievement of its mission, including protecting the Industrial Accident Fund so that it remains available for injured workers. And our oldest claim, I update the record, Mr. Austin passed away since our last appearance. Our oldest claim now dates back to 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt was president. We have an ongoing obligation to a 95-year-old gentleman. We're going to be around for a long time just to deal with the claims we already have, even if we were to cease operations tomorrow.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Quickly, Representative.
What would happen if the legislature stood you on your own, said you're no longer a state agency, you can go ahead and compete in the market, you can have foreign accounts, you can have, you know, whatever kind of accounts you want to have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that would be a major change, and it would end up with a marketplace that's a two-way system rather than a three-way system without the balancing provided by an organization like SAFE that has a public mission to keep workers' compensation insurance as low as possible. Our mission would become one of achieving profit like our competitors, and at least initially, because we'd be subject to federal taxation under that scenario, the cost of workers' compensation insurance in the state would go up.
Mr. Chair.
One last quick question. Do you see anything in the Dash 2 amendments that would limit SAFE's ability to pay dividends that it believes are appropriate?
Mr. Chair, the Dash 2 amendments would, we believe, over time politicize the operation of SAFE Corporation, a board overseeing a board, and that could, in the long term, certainly jeopardize our ability to pay dividends. But explicitly, to your narrow question, no, we don't see anything that would explicitly do that.
Okay. Representative Bates.
Just a quick question. What I just heard you say, and I want to be sure I understood it, you said that your loss of ability to be exempt from federal funds would significantly affect your bottom line. You'd have to raise rates for insurance, mm-hmm. I heard you properly. I take from that, then, that you admit that you are not on a level playing field with insurance companies. You have an asset they don't have because you're state-supported or a part of the state government. I also take from that you don't believe the competitive model will drive down insurance rates because its profits have to be taken out of companies in order to do that. I want to be sure I heard you correctly on those statements you just made.
Representative Witt, Representative Bates, in our material you'll see some sections, I think it's redundant to the earlier bill, that talk about our advantages and disadvantages. There are a number of them, and I would refer you to that written testimony. Certainly not having to pay federal income taxes is our principal advantage. We have a number of disadvantages that offset that, we believe. Could you remind me, Representative Bates, of the second half of your question?
You also made, Mr. Chair, you also made reference that competition between insurance companies apparently isn't going to drive down the cost of insurance because those companies' primary goal is to make profits. I would suggest that's the basis of our economic society is right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, this is one for economists to debate, but this is a mandatory product. This is not a free market product. Employers have to buy it. And what you'll find in states that don't have a fund with a different mission is you'll find a number of private carriers competing against each other, generally at a level that's a little higher price-wise than if you have the intervention of an entity like SAFE Corporation. That's kind of a national experience. When you have to buy a product, if you're an employer, you end up with cartel-like behavior. And that's the risk of not having an entity like SAFE in the market, in my opinion.
Representative Knapp.
Yeah, I want to get back to my questions from earlier. Could you say that you are appealing the decision of the judge to not disclose stuff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, yes. We have been advised by the Department of Justice that they think we should appeal. There's some very important principles embodied. The order from Judge Lipscomb of the Marion County Circuit Court is rather cryptic, and it appears that he's taking great issue with an opinion by the Supreme Court in a case called TGE versus Bowling, which talks about how you must rely on the plain language of the statute. There's some legislative history that suggests that there was not careful drafting done when some of the issues and dispute in this litigation occurred. So, yes, we are appealing.
So, I guess, Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Are you're not appealing on the grounds that you should disclose the information. You're appealing on technical grounds as it relates to the AG's opinion on...
Mr. Chair, Representative Knope, we are appealing to preserve the opportunity to have trade secrets like other competitive entities.
Thank you. Thank you. If we can have Mr. Geisinger, Mr. Luoto, and Mr. Wilson. Gentlemen, we only have about 4 to 5 minutes, so.
Yep. Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is J.L. Wilson with NFIB. I approached this issue with armed with a couple inescapable facts, the first of which is Oregon is a uniquely small business state with 60% of our businesses employing fewer than 5 people. The other inescapable fact is they insure predominantly through SAFE. 70% of my membership is insured through SAFE. My grounds for opposing 3797, 3980, whenever you're taking away benefits that would accrue to small business in the form of dividends and having them subsidize the contributions that big business would make, whether it's to a rainy day fund, whether it's to the WBF, I will oppose with every fiber of my being. With regard to the Dash 2 amendments, it would appear to me, knowing what I know about the intent of 3797 and 3980, I think you can forgive me for being a little leery as to the intent. I think we're playing games, and it seems as if the premise is that SAFE's current board just fell off the turnip truck. The bottom line is, if you want to change the board, change the existing board. Start from scratch and appoint who you want to appoint, who you think will do a more adequate job. If you want to change its SAFE statutory mission, then look at its statutory mission, see what the expectations are, and see if SAFE complies. All of those things are well within your purview, and those are appropriate forms of action if the committee or the legislature ever deems necessary. But to appoint a second oversight board to oversee the work of the first board, I don't know any members of NFIB who would do that in their own business, because it just doesn't make sense. And so I urge your opposition on those grounds.
Thank you, Mr. Geisinger.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jim Geisinger. I represent the Associated Oregon Loggers, a trade association representing over 900 independent logging contractors and related businesses. I can't overemphasize how important SAFE and its programs are to the viability of our members. It's really the only option they have for workers' compensation insurance at affordable rates. Like many others in this room, we were aware of these Dash 2 amendments about an hour and a half ago. Our initial reaction is the creation of this examination and oversight commission is unnecessary, it's redundant, it's costly, and given the budget situation that's facing you folks here, there's plenty of safeguards in place right now to oversee the operations of SAFE. And I share the skepticism of my colleague from NFIB about what the real motive here is, and I'd just like to take a second to review how we got to where we are here this afternoon. I sat here over a month ago and I listened to a very eloquent presentation about why we needed a rainy day fund to protect taxpayers in this state during poor economic times. The creation of an economic security fund was proposed using SAFE's reserves to finance it. And then for the next 3 weeks, every morning when I drove to work and every evening when I drove home, I listened to radio ads, one of which said, "Did you know that your state legislature isn't saving any of your, quote, hard-earned taxpayer dollars, unquote, for a savings account, so your taxes won't have to be raised in bad economic times?" The implication was that the Economic Security Fund would be financed with, quote, hard-earned taxpayer dollars, unquote, and the ad went on to encourage people to call you folks, their legislators, to encourage support for House Bill 3797. Well, as you know, that bill had nothing to do with hard-earned taxpayer dollars. It had everything to do with SAFE's reserves and the dividends that our members and others that that are policyholders with SAFE periodically receive. I would be very disappointed, as would our members, to see a well-heeled special interest that practices such deceptive and disingenuous practices be rewarded by passing this bill. They clearly are not interested in the oversight of SAFE. They're interested in dismantling it, and that would not be in our best interest or the 35,000 policyholders that SAFE currently insures.
Mr. Geisinger, would you object to this bill that if there was a determination made by the actuarial firm that's doing the study that there were excess surpluses, if the bill required that those excess surpluses be paid back to policyholders in some kind of an equitable lump sum arrangement?
If the commission existed and they made that decision, of course we would applaud it. That does not mean that we support the creation of such a commission because we think it's unnecessary and redundant.
So your objection to this bill is that you think the commission is excessive and redundant, and you have a concern that these dollars will get siphoned away from policyholders, which currently, if there is an excess surplus, which are currently either used for dividends or to hold rates lower than they otherwise would be. But my question is, what if this bill required, if there was a determination that it was excess surplus, that excess surplus had to be paid to policyholders in a lump sum? Would you still be opposing the bill?
If the commission existed, we would not oppose that decision. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid there's another shoe that's going to drop here that we aren't aware of.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Loretto?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Lovato. I'm an owner of Cross and Crown, Inc. I'm an independent contract logger. We have about 30 employees that we currently insure with the State Accident Insurance Fund, which is SAFE, for workers' compensation insurance. I appreciate the opportunity to testify against House Bill 3980 as amended. Let's be clear, this bill has little to do with helping injured workers and everything to do with crippling an operation of SAFE and raising the cost of workers' compensation insurance. The proponents of this bill wish to increase the cost of workers' compensation insurance for the smallest businesses in the state and ask the vulnerable sector of the business community to singularly bear out the burden of funding a program that currently financed by every employer in the state. As most of you know, that a lot of the farms, logging industry, and everything else in our state has been, in the last several years, been getting damaged, not necessarily by insurance claims, but by the tough economic times, downturns, industry changes. We don't need another hit on our plate. There's going to be a lot of people, as you well know, that may not be in business. I cannot overemphasize the importance of SAFE to my business. They provide the best claim service. They hold our cost of operations down, and they have collected more premiums than they need. That's when I get my dividends back. I do that basically on a safety program. It's not a secret how this operates. If my employees have a good year and I'm in one of the top five businesses in the world or in the nation that are dangerous, they have a good year, we get our dividends back. The dividends that we get back, if other insurance companies have that, end up on the East Coast somewhere. And I really do appreciate having our own insurance company here that keeps our dollars in Oregon for our businesses, and that means a lot to me. One of the things that I think everybody realizes or remembers, or if they don't, I'll remind you, is that about 12 years ago, we had in our business alone, we were paying about 35 cents on the dollar for our insurance. And that currently is down to about half of that. So I see that as part of what has happened with our overall, the ability of the legislature to change some of the rules in the past few years. But also, I give credit to SAFE on that, on their abilities.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel from the committee? Okay, thank you. We have used up our 45 minutes for the opponents of the bill. Accordingly, I guess Ms. Neidig is here. Would you mind coming up? I think she's here. You're here primarily to answer questions, if there's any questions. Is that correct? Ms. Neidig is Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Is there anything you wanted to add in terms of any testimony?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am the Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services, and for the purposes of this discussion, I am the Insurance Commissioner in Oregon. I just had one point which I believe will respond to Representative Crummell's questions around discounting. I believe you asked earlier whether this method of discounting reserves is common practice within insurance companies in Oregon. And this was the concern that we had about the parts of the bill that are now remaining under the Dash 2 amendments. Currently, private carriers do not discount reserves. It is a practice that SAFE is allowed to do in Oregon. This particular method would allow the discounting to be raised from the current 4% discounting to something that would be based on the T-bill rates, could be as high as 6 to 8%. So it's a pretty significant change in our mind as a regulator for discounting, and we had a concern about that. We have worked with the bill sponsors. We have some draft language that we think would fix our concerns. We would be happy to share that with the committee.
Do you think the amount of the discount that's allowed for in the bill then is excessive or not sufficient?
Mr. Chair, we think it's higher than the current practice, and we think that would be more excessive than it currently is.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Neidig? Representative Knopf, we'll come back to Representative.
That's fine.
Ms. Neidig, somebody mentioned that you might have additional language for the bill or had some concerns about language. Do you have specific language?
Yeah, Chair Witt, Representative Knoop, we have draft language that the bill sponsors are in approval of as well. Would you like?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nightingale, I just want to go back to what you said a second ago about the language and the fact that it would be excessive. Does that mean, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly, by discounting reserves under that fashion, if it's excessive, does that mean it's going to create a greater surplus, or does that mean it will create a less surplus that then puts the state accident insurance fund at greater risk?
Chair Witt, Representative Crummell, let me just explain quickly what discounting means, because I think the term actually makes this somewhat confusing. If an insurer, Safe, reserves $100 for the cost of a claim over time, the way discounting works is they can take 95, let's use just simple numbers, $95 of that $100 in the reserves, and under the theory that if it isn't needed for a year or 2 years, the rate of inflation, the earnings that they can get off of that will someday be equal to the amount needed. So the concept of discounting is today they discount the dollars they will need in the future. So our concern as a regulator is that any discounting practice will always assure that there will always be that $100 some point in time when it's needed to pay the reserves of that claim. So under current practices, SAFE is allowed to discount up to 4% only on a certain kind of claim, permanent total disability claims, for instance, that are typically long-term claims. Under this bill, again, depending on the T-bill rates and so forth, it could be as high as 6 or 8%. So it makes it more risky over time. It makes that reserve level more risky over time. The net result of this is that more money would be moved from reserves into surplus, and the surplus would ultimately be larger. So the outcome is a larger surplus. The concern is a higher risk for being able to pay the liabilities against that claim in the future.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Representative Bates?
Mr. Chair, I assume that the language has been agreed upon with the supporters of the bill, and this is more of a technical change as far as the insurance industry is concerned. You bring that forward as a dash three?
Chair Witt, Representative Bates, we understand. We've worked with the bill sponsor. We believe that they're fine with the amendment. I do consider it technical, but it is certainly something that's of a concern for us, and it could be a dash three amendment, yes.
Thank you.
Johnson.
Thank you. Ms. Medick, have you reviewed your proposed amendment with Ms. Keene and any of her staff?
Representative Witt, Chair Johnson, not at this point. We haven't had an opportunity to do that yet. We certainly will do that.
Any other questions for Ms. Medick? Representative Devlin?
Ms. Medick, your position, you're in the executive branch, correct?
That's correct.
Do you know if the chief executive has a position on this bill?
Chair Witt, Representative Devlin, do I know what the chief executive,
the governor
has a position on this bill? My understanding is the governor's position is that the governor is neutral on the bill, and that was primarily because of the relationship this bill might have to the outcome of the workers' compensation study that is, as of today, now published. So I'm assuming that he continues to be neutral, but we haven't had a further discussion on that.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Carlson.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to find where in the printed bill or the amendment that was put in. It's an amendment to the deleted section, I think, when we hit look at the dash. Which I was confused by.
No, it's on page.
It should read page three, and it should be adjusting the
on line 38.
Page 3, line 38.
Right, is that in the hand and gross, still in the hand and gross?
Yes.
It is, okay.
It's still in.
Okay, so it's actually...
The memo is incorrectly listed, the section.
Okay.
And given the changes, that's probably why.
Well, yeah, but it's for...
Representative Carlson, does that answer your question?
One.
I think Representative Crummel had a question.
CE.
Right.
I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Nidek, do you have an opinion about subsidy? Is SAFE being subsidized by either the Oregon taxpayers or any other aspect of the public other than, or are they wholly funded through their through the premiums that they charge to businesses for workers' comp insurance?
Chair Witt, Representative Crummel, by subsidy, are you suggesting that there are some funds that come to SAFE other than the policyholder?
Well, it's been suggested in testimony on previous bills. I thought I heard it mentioned here today, and I may not have, but I'm just wanting to find out, you know, if there's this concern about subsidy, is SAFE being subsidized? I don't know the answer to the question. I know you're never supposed to ask a question up here that you don't know the answer to, but I don't know the answer to the question. And I guess I'd like your opinion. Is SAFE being subsidized by anybody?
Chair Witt, Representative Crummel, you should also never answer a question you don't know the answer to as well.
But you're going to try?
Yeah. Let me take a stab at this. I have certainly heard people say that SAFE has an advantage. Maybe that's how subsidy is being used, because of the differences that SAFE has, statutory differences in the way SAFE is structured. Certainly there are some benefits or advantages that SAFE does have. There are some disadvantages that SAFE does have. It is a matter of policy by the legislature, how they want SAFE to be structured in Oregon. We don't have an opinion on whether that's right or wrong, but I think that may be what you're referring to as subsidies. Could be.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nidek.
Thank you.
Oh, can I ask one more question? It should be really quick.
You promise?
I promise.
Okay. You promise it should be really quick.
It should be really quick. I promise it should be really quick, Mr. Chair. Thank you. How can SAFE send out dividends that are close to or compare closely to the premiums that they take in? That's another charge that's out there, and I'm just curious as to how that could happen.
Chair Witt, Representative Crummel, I'm sorry. Can you ask the question again?
Well, Mr. Chair. The charge has been that there's been several charges, and one of them has been that SAFE pays out over $100 million in dividends back to their policyholders. I'm just curious as to how, and if they only take in $100 million or $120 million in premiums in a year, how can they send back $100 million in dividends? There was one man that testified here that said that he had been approached by a SAFE salesperson that said that they could, you know, just about give him his workers' comp insurance for free because they could refund him more money than he spends on his premiums. How can that happen?
Chair Witt, Representative Crummel, just one thought on that, and you certainly can ask the same question of SAFE as well. They could certainly have a response, but one piece of that is that SAFE does not pay dividends to all policyholders. In other words, the reference you made that some insurers, some employers get free insurance is essentially what you're suggesting. Not all policyholders get dividends. Not all policyholders get the same amount of dividends. So the average is probably significantly lower than that statement might lead you to think. So that may be one piece of that. Another piece of that may be also that SAFE pays dividends. Most recently, one of the resources for SAFE dividends is interest earnings on the fund itself. That would be above the level of policyholder contributions.
Okay.
That isn't an that's a typical practice for carriers to do.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3980. Open a work session on House Bill 3980. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we've conferred about some options on this bill, and I think we've heard from a number of members, actually on both sides of the aisle on this committee, that they need additional time to be able to make an educated decision about this bill. To give the people in the audience an idea, when I came into this hearing, this was the size of this bill. This is what's been added to this file since that. About an hour before I came into the hearing, one of the proponents of the bill said, I've seen the Secretary of State's report that came out today, and it indicates that I should be a proponent of this bill. This is the Secretary of State's report. I think that there are a lot of people here that would like some additional time to be able to sit down and look at the issues that have been presented, look at the amendments that's been presented. For realities, the committee has only had the actual bill for a few days. I ran into the good representative from Ashland this morning who was not very pleased by his bill, actually, because there were some things in it he didn't know that would be in it. And between this morning and this afternoon, we had the Dash 2 amendments, and they arrived at the committee right as we were meeting, or almost at that time. So with that, Mr. Chairman, and knowing that neither side could prevail right now if this went to a vote, I am moving that this go to a date specific, be deferred to a date specific of May 9th, 2001, which is next Wednesday.
Thank you. Representative Devlin has made a motion that the work session and vote on this bill go to a date specific May 9th?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, and although I did not state it, the intent of my motion was that that would be a work session.
All right, thank you. That's what I thought. So that Representative Devlin makes a motion that we would set this bill over for work session, date specific, next Wednesday, May 9th at 3:30. I will tell the committee that, as you know, I anonymously asked all of you to let me know what your position was on this bill with the Dash 2 amendments here in the last 15 or 20 minutes. And I can tell the committee that there is not a consensus in support or in opposition to this bill at this time on this committee. And because of that, I think it would be appropriate to support Representative Devlin's motion here, because it will give everybody more time to read through this bill, to consider this bill, to talk to people think you need to talk to, and of course, to look at the report that came out today. And again, I would encourage all of you to study this and come to the best conclusion you can come to. And next Wednesday, we will try to hopefully have some motion on this bill one way or the other. Representative Walker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no choice but to support the motion since we don't have enough votes to take action on the bill one way or the other tonight. I myself personally think that the evidence is abundantly clear that this agency needs oversight, and I do look forward to reading the audit report. I kidded Mr. DiLorenzo one night that I took his exhibit home and read it for nighttime reading, which I usually do, and it puts me to sleep, but this was a page turner. I expect the audit report to be a page turner as well, from what I understand. So I do hope the committee can come back and approve this bill next Wednesday. And I would ask that this conceptual amendment be put into a real amendment in the meantime.
And I would also point out to the opponents of this bill that there are not sufficient votes to defeat this bill at this time either. And I'm trying to respect provide an opportunity for every member of this committee to cast an informed vote. But if we accept Representative Devlin's motion, you know that next Wednesday is the day. So if you can't vote yes, you'll have to vote no. Representative Bates.
I would like to thank the chair first for working with me on this bill today. It's been a difficult and long day, and I appreciate your efforts. I think that the evidence today again shows oversight is probably going to be appropriate for this agency, but that's a decision you'll have to make after you've looked at the evidence and made your decision on. I want to make it abundantly clear that the Dash 2 amendments are the amendments I want, and they represent my position in this, on this bill, that the prior bill coming out was not what I wanted. The Dash 2 reflects what I'm interested in here, which is oversight of Safe Corporation.
Yeah, Representative, I have asked Mr. Clem to get a Dash 3 amendment, which would incorporate Ms. Neidig's language into the Dash 2s. Okay. Representative Walker?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There's actually an additional change I'd like to make to Ms. Neidig's language, and I can get that to Mr. Clem.
Okay, that may...
As long as we're taking the time to change this, I'd like to do that. Additionally, I'd like to remind the committee that if you have not stated a position on this bill, be prepared for the next several days for the phone calls, faxes, and emails that just seem to increase by the day from those who are opposed to any kind of oversight to SAFE.
Yeah, and I do want to point out to the committee that next Wednesday we're going to have a vote on this bill. So don't anticipate another delay, because we're getting late in the session and it just wouldn't be fair to anybody at this point to delay it. We will have a vote. Representative Canope.
Mr. Chairman, question to Representative Walker.
Yes.
Did you want to share with the committee what your amendment is, just so we know generally what direction you're headed with it?
I just, Representative Canope and Mr. Chair, I just had a moment to confer with some folks outside, and there's part of the sentence she wanted to delete, I think, and any other rate specified by the committee is the part that they would like to add back in, but I need to talk with those folks and make sure.
Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask that the committee administrator make the Secretary of State's report available to those committee members that are not Revenue Committee members?
Yes. Would you do that, Dan, please? Yes, he will do that. Representative Trump.
Mr. Chair, what is the process if there are portions of the bill that are still in the Dash 2 amendments that we can't support? Are we required next week to support the Dash 2 or nothing?
Representative, you can come with an amendment that would change the bill, you know, beyond the Dash 2 amendments to something that you would want to support, and you're certainly free to propose that with another amendment.
Okay, thank you.
And
okay. Representative Garrett.
I just was going on record with Dan that I wanted to get a copy of.
Oh, okay. Report. Representative Walker.
And yes, Mr. Chair, likewise, we can, I can even move the bill in its original form.
Of course,
next
yeah.
Wednesday.
We're in work sessions. So.
And I think perhaps after you read the audit, you might be in agreement with
yeah, that. I think obviously we're going to be in work session, so you can come with whatever amendments you might want to come with. That's absolutely correct. Anything else?
Okay, this is just any objection or welcome?
Just any objection.
Is there any objection to adopting the motion of Representative Devlin?
I'm going to object.
Ms. Representative Crum would like to object. Do you want to state a reason for the objection, Representative?
The primary reason is that I think that there's a desire to move the bill. But I do appreciate the I will definitely take the time to look at the additional material and the Secretary of State's material when it comes out. Oversight in general, and as I looked at the Dash 2 amendments and was listening to the testimony, I can't really oppose oversight necessarily, and the Dash 2 amendments did strip out the things that were definitely objectionable to me.
Yeah, and
that's the only reason why I'm going to.
Okay, and I'd point out to Representative Crummel and to the rest of the committee that I'm, you know, I don't necessarily have a personal desire to move the bill one way or the other any more than any of you might or might not.
Right.
And I would encourage all of you to study the bill, study the report, study the testimony that's been given today, come to the best judgment that you can come to relative to this bill. Mine is one vote among 11.
I would like to point out one other thing, Mr. Chair, if I might, and that is and each member can speak for themselves. I don't need to be lobbied on this bill anymore. Let me make that very clear to those of you sitting in the audience. What I need is the time to sit down and read the materials. And if you're lobbying me on the bill, I don't have time to do that. So I just thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there, once again, is there any objection to Representative Devlin's motion that this bill be considered in work session next Wednesday, May the 9th, other than Representative Frummels, which has been noted? If not, it is so ordered, and we are adjourned.
Oh, you're kind of.